Celia has still managed to work, and yesterday we heard her reporting on the fifth anniversary of Benedict's election as Pope and how the mounting scandals over pedophile priests could affect his legacy. Today, we'll learn more about an influential and charismatic priest who Pope Benedict punished when no one else would.
Father Marcial Maciel built the conservative Legion of Christ into a powerful Catholic order. Over several decades, Maciel raised millions of dollars for the church. Some estimate the order's assets are worth $20 billion. After Maciel died in 2008, his order revealed that he had fathered a daughter. Others have come forward claiming to be his sons.
There were years of allegations ignored by the Vatican that Father Maciel sexually abused seminarians as young as 12. Our next guest has reported that Father Maciel hid his secret life by buying the protection of key Vatican officials. Investigative journalist Jason Barry's series on Father Maciel was published by the National Catholic Reporter. Good morning.
Good morning.
Let's begin with some background on Father Maciel. How did he build this order, the Legion of Christ, into such an influential organization?
Well, he was born in southwest Mexico in 1920 at a time when the church was being persecuted. His family was entwined with the Catholic hierarchy. Four of his uncles were bishops. So he grew up in this environment of an embattled church, you might say. By the time he was 21, he began this religious order. What's so significant about that, Renee, is that he had been thrown out of two seminaries by the time he was 21 for reasons that in later years the Legion history referred to as misunderstandings. We now know that he was sexually abused as a boy, had a very troubled family life. He seems to have had this militant sense of spirituality, and he was a genius at fundraising. From the earliest years of his involvement with high church officials, he always had money, lots of it.
Before we get to this money trail, which you followed, what was Father Maciel accused of?
Well, there was actually a lineage of allegations against him that began really in the 1940s. He was also a morphine addict, and he was accused in 1956 of abusing drugs and to making sexual advances on these young seminarians. The Vatican did an investigation, suspended him, but then reinstated him in 1959. He was then accused forcefully in 1976 by a former priest of the Legion, Juan Vaca, in a very detailed dossier of allegations that went to the Vatican. Vaca made a second petition in 1978 and again in 1989, and absolutely nothing happened. In a sense, the Vatican created this guy by not going after him.
So how did Maciel manage to avoid any sort of, almost to the end, any sort of punishment? Was it all about the fact that this was a very rich order and raised so much money for the church?
We know that wealthy families who gave money to the Legion of Christ had a pipeline, frankly, to go to private masses said by Pope John Paul II in the Apostolic Palace. One priest told me how he facilitated a $50,000 donation to Monsignor Divish, who is now a cardinal in Krakow. Monsignor Divish lived in the Apostolic Palace and organized the guests at the papal masses. Besides Monsignor Divish, who was so close to Pope John Paul, Maciel had a staunch supporter in Cardinal Angelo Sedano, the Secretary of State. And in the article, I quote a couple of men who talk about the cash donations that went to Sedano, $10,000 at one point, $5,000 at another point. You know, it really reminds one of Tammany Hall or, you know, the Chicago political machine 30 or 40 years ago. Needless to say, all of this was a way of buying influence and protection for Father Maciel.
And it worked.
It absolutely worked until 2006, when he was almost 86 years old, and Pope Benedict, after an investigation that he had ordered in 2004, dismissed him from active ministry and ordered him to a life of prayer and penitence, which is a rather soft punishment. But given how well protected this man was, I think we have to credit the Pope with finally breaking ranks with Cardinal Sedano, the Secretary of State, who had defended Maciel for so long.
When you were being told about these envelopes, you know, filled with cash, real bundles of money, what leads you to understand that these were in some way bribes rather than to do good works with?
Well, Renee, the men I interviewed are priests. And these are men who left the Legion of Christ some years ago. And one of the things that struck me about these interviews, I got to know these men. I spent time with them. These were men who have remade their lives. They are loyal priests. And I think they have been stricken in their consciences. And they were willing to talk because I think they wanted to unburden themselves of a certain sense of guilt.
Thank you very much for talking with us.
You're quite welcome. It's been my pleasure.
Journalist Jason Barry produced Vows of Silence, a documentary on Father Marcial Maciel and the Legion of Christ. This is Morning Edition from NPR News. I'm Renee Montagne.
And I'm Steve Inskeep. Good morning. College seniors may struggle to find a job this spring, but they are getting a graduation present from the health insurance industry. They will be permitted to remain on their parents' health insurance plans. NPR's Julie Rovner has the story.
The rules of most health insurance policies are this. Your adult child can stay on your policy only if he or she is a full-time student. So when they graduate, their health insurance goes away. Among the people it happened to is Health and Human Services Secretary Kathleen Sebelius and her two children.
We went through this when both of them got out of school and were not headed for jobs where there was health insurance involved.
That won't happen anymore under the new health law. Young adults can stay on their parents' plans, regardless of student status, until age 26. But it doesn't take effect until September. That left a several-month gap for this year's graduates, so Sebelius decided to see if she could do something about it.
We began a little outreach to just see if there was some appetite in really closing this gap. And frankly, companies thought that it was a good idea.
So yesterday, WellPoint Inc., which covers 33 million people, and United Healthcare, which covers 24 million, both announced they'd start covering most young adults sooner. For United, that coverage begins essentially right away. WellPoint will begin June 1st, but that will pick up anyone who graduates in May, since coverage always lasts till the end of the month. Bradley Flugel, Chief Strategy Officer for WellPoint, says accelerating the coverage simply makes good business sense.
It seemed not really in our members' interest to disenroll them and only to have them re-enroll 3 months later. That seemed overly complicated, so it just seemed to make sense to just let them stay on.
And Richard Collins of United says young adults are generally cheap to insure, so why would insurers want to let them go?
This population does not always avail itself of the opportunities to have health insurance in the market that there are, and we would like to cover more of them.
HHS Secretary Sebelius says she's optimistic that more insurers will soon follow the two big companies' lead. Julie Rovner, NPR News, Washington.
If you walk up to people old enough to have college-age kids, that would be middle-aged adults, and you ask them, how's your brain functioning these days, you're likely to hear answers like this.
Well, I ran into somebody that I had worked with for several years and could not remember her name at all, and it was really embarrassing.
I'm dismayed by the number of times that I walk into a room and then I look around and say, wait a minute, what's in here that I could have come for?
I forgot something really big last weekend, and I can't remember what it is. It was like someplace I needed to be, or like I took the kids to the wrong place.
Detail.
It was pretty funny in hindsight, like I can't believe I forgot that, but I did.
You could call them small stumbles, but the fact is people are not imagining them. Scientists tell us that as we careen through middle age, our brains do slow down. People have trouble retrieving names, get easily distracted, but the news is nowhere as bad as one might think. In fact, science writer Barbara Strauch set out to explain why brains falter in middle age and wound up writing a book about how brains can flourish. The book is called The Secret Life of the Grown-Up Brain, and by grown-up, she means people roughly between the ages of 40 and 65.
They used to think that it was a
one big slide, a decline, and that we lost 30% of our brain cells as we aged. Now they know, as they look in there with brain scanners and things year after year, we don't. In fact, we keep our brain cells pretty intact as long as
which is a relief.
It's a huge finding, actually, and has completely flipped around how we think about how the brain ages. There is some shrinkage here and there, but in general, our brains, if there isn't a disease of some sort, basically we can do quite fine.
You have research that suggests that middle-aged people shouldn't panic about their brains because actually they're getting better. Start us with one.
Well, for instance, there's some studies that started in the 50s that trace the same people throughout their lives, and they find out in this middle span, we are get higher scores on cognitive tests in a whole range of areas, including things like inductive reasoning, believe it or not, verbal memory, vocabulary. We're better in that span of time than we were when we were in our 20s.
Well, one of the studies, to give an example of how this might work, was one of air traffic controllers who were in their mid-60s.
Right. They went to Canada to study controllers who can work to their 65, and they found some cognitive declines on tests. But when you actually test them and what they're supposed to be doing, for instance, keeping planes from colliding with each other, they do just as well as they did when they were younger, as do pilots.
Well, is Chesley Sullenberger, who's quite famous now, the pilot who ditched the U.S. Airways plane in the Hudson so perfectly, is he an example of that?
He is, in fact, and it's not only him. The whole crew was what they call senior. It was an amazing story, actually. We had ferry boat captains and tugboat captains all watching this happen, many of them middle-aged, and they all, in a split second, made all the right decisions. And so we had a kind of a middle-aged extravaganza that came out quite well.
We all talk about gray matter. You've been talking about that, how the brain, in fact, a lot of that gray matter doesn't die. But there's also, as you describe in the book, white matter. Tell us about that, and it turns out to be quite a good thing.
Right. It's fat, actually. It's this fatty stuff that kind of coats the long tails of the brain cells. And so as we do things, as we learn things, the white matter increases. The brain signals move faster. And this was also a shock, but they find that the white matter peaks in middle age. So that itself might be middle-aged wisdom because the brain sees connections. It sees the full picture. As one friend of mine, she's an AIDS doctor in her 50s, she says, when I walk into a hospital room now, you know, I can size up the situation much faster. We get to the gist of an argument faster. Some people think we can be even more creative because we see these connections.
In the book, you also talk about how middle-aged people can protect their brains from the natural effects of aging. Mm-hmm. And one of the more compelling strategies seems to be exercise.
You know, the science at this point, the best science is on exercise. The brain is much more like the heart than we thought. So, and they find things like walking around a track 3 times a week increases brain volume. They find that exercise increases the ability of the brain to produce new baby brain cells, which nobody thought was possible anyhow as an adult until a few years ago. It does have to be exercise that gets your heart going, but it doesn't have to be marathons.
What did you learn that tells us where to from here? As one moves into the 70s and beyond, will the brain hang in there unless there's disease?
Well, there's all sorts of things that can happen. Cardiovascular disease, of course, of any sort affects the brain, strokes and things like that. But what they find also in middle age is this is when the brain, they think, is on the cusp. There's a great deal of variability as we go through middle age, and some brains just keep going on fine and some brains don't. And so what they're trying to figure out is what's the difference. And that really makes middle age, what we do during this span of time, even more important.
You're taking care of yourself is sort of what you said. But crossword puzzles and mind games and experiences where you're challenging yourself, is that partly what you're talking about?
Yes. I mean, I think that crossword puzzles are kind of thought to be not enough anymore. You're kind of retrieving stuff you already know. There's nothing wrong with them. But what they do know is that one way or another, you have to push your brain very hard. You have to make it not comfortable. And there's some science that says that things like even talking to people who disagree with you is good. Basically, it helps you sharpen your own thinking. It challenges those. The brain likes a good rut, and we need to kick them out of those ruts a little bit. You know, if you always watch MSNBC, maybe you should switch to Fox or vice versa, just to get your blood boiling a little bit.
That's New York Times science editor Barbara Strauch, who told us that actually blood is less likely to boil as we get older. Go to NPR.org to hear why older adults accentuate the positive. You can also read excerpts from her book, The Secret Life of the Grown-Up Brain.
My brain is always ticking, my brain. My brain is always ticking, my brain.